Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store, and this is Justice by Design. So this episode, we're going to do things a little differently. Instead of laying out an issue and talking through the solution to it, this one's going to be a little more open, a little more raw, because I have to tell you guys, I'm tired and I'm frustrated. And I'm frankly, with less than a week to go before this election, the most consequential election since the last one, but it's still the most consequential one right now, I'm really trying to figure out how we make it over the finish line. And by we, I don't just mean, you know, the people fighting for democracy. I mean us, Americans, everybody, myself included. I need to be talked off the ledge. So this week, to help do that, is Jamal Simmons, who is a co-host of the Trailblaze podcast, a longtime media strategist in political circles, and all around good guy. Jamal, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Kimberly. It's a pleasure to be here.
So if anybody possibly doesn't know who you are, can you just introduce yourself to our audience?
Yeah, I'm happy to be here. Listen, I have been in and around Democratic politics my whole life, since the 90s. And I have, you know, worked for, you know, all sorts of candidates, from President Clinton to supporting Barack Obama to, most recently, I was in the White House. I was Kamala Harris's communications director, but she was the vice president, 2022 to 2023. And I've seen, you know, pretty up close the talents of this vice president and how she's able to really make the case that she's making today. We saw some of those seeds all the way back then, even though I think a lot of people weren't paying attention to it. But now I'm really happy to be co-hosting Trailblaze with my friend Naira Haque. And we are excited to talk a lot about the America that we're becoming and the people who are helping us get there and how we build a constructive community and a nation that's going to be able to kind of be a place for all of us, strong enough for all of us to live and to thrive.
Yeah. And if you don't already follow Trailblaze, you really must. It's one of Politicon's great lineup of podcasts that are getting us through this election season and beyond. So, Jamal, I have to be honest. I watched the vice president give her remarks at the Ellipse. I thought they were pitch perfect. I thought it created just an unbelievable contrast to what we all saw go down Sunday night at Madison Square Garden in New York. But afterwards, I had a little breakdown because I knew once the dust cleared, this is still an unbelievably close race. And as somebody who believes very much in democracy, who believes very much in the ideals upon which this nation was founded, even when those ideals weren't always in reach of folks who look like you and me, but I still believe in fighting for them.
Yeah.
I was so frustrated at the idea that they can be in this much peril, this close still to an election. And I just didn't know what to make of that. So for anyone else feeling like I do right now, what do you tell them in terms of, and we'll get to the campaign later, but in terms of us as Americans who are feeling the same way, how do we get this over the finish line?
Yeah, you know, America's a tricky place. I always land back at that, right? And America has a way of surprising you, both, you know, with good things and with more troubling ones. You know, the reality that, you know, we would even have another African-American woman, another African-American as a nominee of a major party within, you know, 10 or 15 years. I don't know that anybody would have thought that would be the case. But here we are again, I always think about this. Imagine if you went back in time, if you could get in a space shuttle or a time machine and you saw Stokely Carmichael, right? Or, you know, one of the more radical, H-Rap Brown or somebody.
Yeah.
Right? And you said to them, listen, before, like in the next like 60 years, there is going to be an African-American president with an African sounding name from the south side of Chicago, who will be beloved by 60% of the country. And then there's going to be a white billionaire businessman from New York who will be reviled by half the country,
yeah,
right? And thrown out of office. The black guy gets reelected. The, you know, the businessman, white businessman gets, you know, loses his reelection and is impeached twice and convicted and all that. I think they would probably think you were crazy.
Right? Yeah.
But America's a tricky place. And so I think we ought to be patient and kind of see how it works out. You know, I believe in the idea of the arc of justice, you know, arc of the moral universe, bends toward justice, but you got to bend it. And it happens over time. I would be lying if I said to you, I wasn't also anxious and had some anxiety about what was coming and, you know, preparing a little bit for maybe some violence or some things that could happen over the course of the next few weeks. It's something for, I think, reasonable people to pay attention to. But I also think Americans have an amazing capacity to do good things and amazing capacity to figure out how to do that after doing really nutty things,
yeah,
by figuring out how to make something else work.
Yeah. And, you know, you're talking about the arc of history bending toward justice. I was just at the MLK National Historic Center in Atlanta this past weekend, you know, and just let's talk about Georgia. The energy there,
yeah,
was so amazing. I could see canvassers. I can hear people urging folks to vote. And then just being in there and trying to remember why fights like this are so important. And, you know, that was a moment for me to say, listen, there's work still to do. I know you're tired. I know you're frustrated, but keep up with it. But this was happening simultaneously at a time where I was feeling the frustrations in even the institutions that seemed like they were failing us. You know, I've talked a lot about the Supreme Court, both on this, yeah, podcast and on hashtag Sisters in Law, an institution that feels like it's failing us. And it's particularly frustrated for me, somebody who went to law school and studied and thought that the rule of law mattered. And then you have someone who has been allowed to be lawless and given the blessing by the Supreme Court to potentially be even more lawless without consequence. Or the Washington Post, right? I remember meeting Katherine Graham as a journalism student,
yeah,
and just what that meant and seeing what has happened with that. And it feels like these institutions are failing us. How do we keep that from, you know, making us lose our hope? Like, how do we steady ourselves even when the structures that are supposed to be in place to help protect democracy, the Fourth Estate, the Supreme Court, we just recently got a ruling that's allowing voter purging in Virginia. How do we keep up that fight and have trust that our government, our people are working for us?
Yeah, you know, this is going to be a little bit of Donnie Downer,
yeah,
but I think it is important that sometimes our work is to leave a record for another generation to know that not everybody was crazy, right? So when bad things happen, they know, like, here are things that people were doing to try to either stop those things or to change them, or at least to stand up for the things that were important, and that there may be lessons in our struggle that they will take and then be able to move from, right? So you think about somebody like Frederick Douglass. Frederick Douglass didn't see any of the things that we're talking about. He didn't see any of it, but he's such an inspiration to all of us, right? Like Du Bois, like the same thing, right? Like they wrote and they spoke and they worked and they kept pushing to try to create, you know, some space in an intellectual space, a space of faith, and inspiration for people. And then now that inspiration, that work has fueled generations of other people who have been able to make incredible strides. So it might be that we get a blowback, right? It,
yeah,
might be that, you know, that we get pushed back and we don't actually, you know, move forward because change is not linear, right? So we don't actually move forward in this moment. But it is still up to us to do work so that generations that we can't predict will be able to come back and say, okay, that's what Kimberly was talking about. This is actually helpful for me. I can figure this out right now.
That's such an important thing to remember. I mean, I'm thinking about some of the historical heroes that I have, like Ida B. Wells and Shirley Chisholm and others who did not get to see a Black woman as the nominee of a major party for president. And what this means for future generations. So it's important to keep that in mind. So I thank you for that. And
you know, I think,
go ahead.
Just briefly on this. I mean, I do think about this from like my own family perspective. My grandfather was, I think about this a lot actually right now. My grandfather, my paternal grandfather was called in front of the House Un-American Activities Committee for his work in Michigan back in the, he was called in the 50s, but his work in the 30s and 40s and associating with communists, right? Mm-hmm. While he was doing labor organizing and he was working to defend people and working on, he was a lawyer and he was working to defend workers and civil rights people and was, you know, called before HUAC. And it ruined his life. Really, you know, he never really recovered. His career never recovered. My older uncle can tell a story of being followed by the FBI to school when he was 9 years old, you know, because they were all being tracked. And so that was a moment of big government FBI, you know, assault kind of on this family. And then, you know, two generations later, he has a grandson who works in the White House, right?
Yeah.
I don't know that he would have predicted that when he was going through this. So I just feel like, you know, not to, this isn't about like patting myself on the back as much as it is like, we just don't know, right? We really don't know what the future holds.
No, that's really true. So I will say something that did give me some solace. I actually wrote a whole column about it, actually, was seeing the vice president's visible frustration with the press sometimes. Like, honestly, that was really, really relatable for me because I do believe that what Van Jones says was true, right? You have Donald Trump, a convicted felon who is allowed to be lawless while she has to be flawless. She cannot make a single mistake. Like, we already know, like, I used to call it the Obama, Obama effect, right? Because it's like, when President Obama was a candidate and certainly when he was a president, it was like, okay, this isn't fair. There's nothing about this that is fair, but you cannot make a mistake. You cannot do anything but be like the perfect exemplar of an American president, because if you mess up at all as a Black man, it is over. Like, it is done.
Right.
And he did. He had this beautiful family that, you know, it wasn't even, they weren't even, I was just like, Sasha and Malia can't be sneaking out. Like, they can't be like, none, like, there can be no shenanigans. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's unfair.
I think they found, at one point, they found Malia, like, she smoked a cigarette with her girlfriends at a like a music concert.
Right?
And it was kind of like a little, you know, tabloid scandal.
Yes. Right? And did her grandmother make her wear a t-shirt? Hunter Biden. Right. So it's even more that with a woman of color running and she has to be so perfect and she has to strike the right tone and she can't get angry. And she all this stuff that was going to be unfair. But when she was being interviewed by Nora O'Donnell on CBS, and O'Donnell is pressing her to clarify and specify her stance on, of all things, abortion. And Kamala Harris clapped her hands together and said, I told you. And just nodded her head and gave that look that like every Black mom has given their kid at a time when they were getting on their very last nerve and you knew to leave them alone.
Right.
And I was just like, thank you. Thank you. Or you know, just before recording this, I saw her talking to reporters on the tarmac at Joint Base Andrews, who were asking her about something that Joe Biden said. And she was like, look, I just gave a whole speech. I'm paraphrasing, but I just
gave a whole speech right.
In front of tens of thousands of people on the Washington Mall, saying, I want to be a president for everybody. Like, what, I, you know, you could just hear her face was saying, what more do you want from me? I have done everything. And that frustration felt so righteous to me. So just, you know, knowing her, knowing how she is very politically savvy, talk a little bit about this moment, what you think this is for her, recognizing everything that we're talking about right here.
You know, one of the things that I think is, I did not quite appreciate when I went to work for her was how much she lives with this history every single day. So, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to work for her was because I have a son and a daughter, and my son, I always felt like we had Barack Obama, and then she was vice president, and I felt like, wow, I want my daughter to have Kamala Harris, right? And at the time, she was vice president. We didn't know if she was going to be running for president, you know, 6 years from now, 8 years from now, whatever it's going to be, 7 years from now. So I wanted to go work for her to just be like, okay, maybe we can help put our hand on the steering wheel a little bit and just try to help steer it. And then I remember traveling with her the first time, and we went to this place, and I saw this little girl look at her like she was Wonder Woman, right? This somebody she met like on a, you know, tarmac, and like in a rope line, looked at her like she was Wonder Woman. And then I saw an older woman like grab her by the hand, and like almost with tears in her eyes, you know, gray hair, and just sort of hold her hand, and kind of, I never thought I would see the day. She said, I never thought I would see the day that a woman would be in the White House. And so, you know, for me, I kind of got like a little tear in my eye watching this thing. And I said that to her. I was like, oh, that was really special. She's like, yeah, it was really nice. And then at some point, someone said to me that worked for her longer, I said, you know, this is what it's like every day. Right?
Wow.
Every day this happens. And in her career, she was the first woman of color to be DA in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. She was the first woman of color to be attorney general. I think the first woman to be attorney general in California. She was the first woman of color to be United States Senator from California. The first woman to be vice president. Like every job she's had, she was the first woman to do it.
Wow.
And on one hand, it's this historical moment that everybody is paying attention to. And everybody gets. On the other hand, you're her. You wake up in the morning. There is no blueprint for what it is your job is supposed to do, how your day is supposed to go. And everybody's understanding of what the vice president is built on 40 some odd white guys who had done this job before.
Yeah.
So my belief was every day, it doesn't matter. We can do whatever we want to do because we're first, mm-hmm. right? And if we do it, if Kamala Harris does it, that will make it vice presidential.
Yeah.
So don't worry about what happened in the past. Let's do what we think is best and move the ball the way that we think the ball ought to be moved, because you're new and you're different. And after you do it, everybody else will say, oh, yeah, this is like a vice presidential event. One of those things that she did, it wasn't my idea, but we were part of the planning thing. So I don't want to take credit for it. But it was this philosophy was having a Juneteenth party at the vice president's residence. And it was the first time that Juneteenth was celebrated at either the vice president's residence or at the White House. And it was just a magnificent event. And we wanted to do it on purpose because we wanted it to become a tradition, like the Easter egg roll or the holiday party, that Juneteenth would be something the White House would celebrate and the vice president would celebrate.
That's great. That's great. And yet we forget, I mean, it gets forgotten what a trailblazer she is. She had to have been. She had to break barriers just to do everything that she did.
Everything. Look, there's nobody to call. I mean, so to button this up, you could call Barack Obama and ask him what it's like to be Black, the first Black person. You could call Hillary Clinton and ask her what it would be like to be the first woman to be nominee. But there's nobody who's ever been the first woman of color mm-hmm. to be the Democratic nominee for president. And there's cross currents to that. Only the person who is sitting in the middle of those cross currents really understands and has to navigate. So I have always felt like we got to give her some room,
yes.
right? And some of that room is to make a mistake.
Yes.
She's going to make a mistake because it's just the nature of being first. But we got to give her the room and space to do that. She cannot be held to a superhuman standard. She has to be held to a standard commiserate with the job that she's trying to go for.
Ugh, I hope that members of the press, which I believe is in for a reckoning, I believe my profession is in for a reckoning, because the last several elections, we need to take a step back and look at ourselves and what we've been doing and how we've been doing it. But I want to go back to this being a historic moment and an extraordinary moment. And I am thinking about the day after Election Day in 2008, when I worked in an office building and I was taking an elevator up, and, you know, white dude in a suit gets on the elevator with me. And he looks at me and he turns to me and says, you know, I supported Senator McCain. I did everything that I could to ensure that he would win. But last night was really something. What a moment for our country, right?
Right.
And it was just like, yeah, really, what? Like, this is historic. Like, this is great. Like, what a great thing that America can say. We have moved beyond this history of ours in order to elect the first Black president. I want to get to a point where people say, you know, I remember just myself, you know, I'm not enrolled in any party. I haven't been for 20 some odd years, but you know, I have my political views, which I've made pretty clear. And I probably did not agree with Condoleezza Rice policy wise on just about anything. But when she became Secretary of State, baby, I was like, a Black woman is speaking for America. Look, when going all over the world, like, I am the United States. Talk to me. I was like, yes, I could not believe what an amazing thing that was. Someone born in the South in poverty and who overcame every barrier there is to overcome to get to that spot. I was proud of that. Can we get to a point where we can recognize our accomplishments, even when they're not from a win in our column?
Yeah, we're becoming something new. Look, one of the things I didn't agree with George W. Bush, you just talked about Condoleezza Rice. I didn't agree with George W. Bush on very many things politically. I mean, he did some good things when he was there, you know, PEPFAR in Africa and some other things, but I didn't agree with him very much politically. But the one thing I admired about him was, I remember after 9/11, there were these pictures that were broadcast from the Situation Room of them figuring out what to do. And around that table was Colin Powell and Karen Hughes, who was a white woman who was his chief advisor, Alberto Gonzalez, who was his White House counsel, Condoleezza Rice, who was the national security advisor at the time, you know, obviously Dick Cheney and a few others. But I just remember thinking, look at that table.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, that table was an amazing table. And I had worked for Al Gore. And I will tell you, I believe this as much as I believe anything. If Al Gore had been president of the United States, that picture would not have looked like that. There would have been some diversity there, but there would not have been the breadth of diversity there. And a moment like 9/11, where this is a crisis. This is not a moment where you're bringing people in just to have them around the table for the photo op. This is like, if you're here, you're here for a reason. We got business to do. Let's everybody get at it, right?
Yeah.
In that moment, his chief advisors looked like America. And they may have given him bad advice later, and it may have been things that I would have done. But there's something that said something to me about him as a human being, that he would be willing to have people like that around him. And I want us to celebrate that. I felt that the same way you did. I want us to celebrate that.
Michelle Obama, for example.
Absolutely.
That was very, yes. Yeah.
I just hope we can find partners on the conservative side, from my side. I hope we can find partners on the conservative side whose agenda, while I may not agree with it, does not involve subjugating people who look like me.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
That is absolutely true. And that is the difference. You have to be able to look at something beyond. Look, even you have someone who is like LBJ, who we know like threw the N-word around, but he also signed civil rights laws into existence that still protect people today. You have someone like John McCain, who was a tough campaign. Let me tell you, the stuff that would come out of him in his campaign, they did not hold back. Like, he, I don't know if people remember, just like politically and policy wise, he would beat Barack Obama up like incessantly. But when somebody stood in front of him and called him an Arab and said he wasn't American, he said, no, ma'am. He is a good man who loves his country. We just have different ideas about what to do to make our country the best that it could be. I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah. George W. Bush, who went to the mosque after 9/11, who went to one of the first places he went was to a mosque. And he said in front of this country, these are our neighbors. They are fellow Americans. We cannot fight this fight if we are fighting each other. We got to band together. Where is that brand?
Where
of
are those Republicans? Yeah.
Right.
That's the thing. Those Republicans are missing. And you have, it's on Vice President Harris, who got up and said, I want to be the president for everyone, whether you voted for me or not. And that isn't enough, but you can't do that unilaterally. right? Yeah. We don't have the Republicans that are standing up. And that gets me back to my beef with the media, that they feel like they need to grill her, they need to make her explain herself, they need to do all of these things. And they've lost all context that this is not an equal situation. This is not a both sides thing. The question should be, you know,
where's bruh?
Right.
Right. The reason this is a town hall is because bruh wouldn't show up for the debate.
Right.
Right.
It should be so different. And I get so frustrated. So as we close this conversation, I just want to say to for the next week, what are some positive things that all liberty and democracy loving Americans can do besides, you know, getting to the bottom of a carton of ice cream to get this over the finish line, to get this past the finish line, because we probably won't have an answer on election night. That is okay. Don't be panicked by that. Don't let anybody tell you that that is nefarious. This could take days. Well, last time it took until the Saturday after Election Day. I don't think it will take that long this time, but it will probably take a couple of days. What should we do between now and the result being counted?
Well, first of all, you know, to use a little bit of a saying these days, turn that anxiety into action, right? Mm-hmm. So call people, text people, make sure people have a plan to early vote or to vote on election day. Bring water with you, snacks, if you live in a place like many African-American communities where the lines are going to be longer than they should be. And people can't now give you water because some of these states are changing the rules. So, you know, bring all your stuff so that you can go and camp out and vote. And then, you know, maybe it's going to be door knocking or, you know, making a phone call or something, or just, you know, taking your kids to a civil rights museum where you can see the, you know, the history of the country and how things have gotten better. You know, but doom scrolling, get out of it. You know, sitting around looking through all the polls and trying to figure out, you know, what happened in, you know, 2018 versus 2022, you know, and the difference in the market. Get out of that. Yeah. That's not going to help you. And, you know, and maybe even at the end of the day, you know, turn to your faith tradition, turn to the things that give you some solace and some hope. Watch a movie. If nothing else fails, like, you know, Terry Garr just died. You know, for those of us who are older, like Terry Garr.
I want to watch Close Encounters again. That's one of my favorite films. Yes. She's so good in it.
You watch Tootsie or something. Like, you know, like find something that's just like completely silly that's going to take your mind off of it.
Yes, yes. That is very good advice from Jamal Simmons. Thank you so much, my friend, for joining me.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
And that's all for Justice by Design this week. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store. Don't forget to join us next week when we talk about what happens after the election. Don't forget to follow us wherever you get your pods, and also follow Trailblaze, two of Politicon's podcasts. We'll see you next week.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.